Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the CLABS conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. Also, as a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to your host, Ms. Hilary Jalen. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thanks so much. Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Hope you all had a great 4th of July holiday last week. First, I just want to let you know Terry Straub will be joining us momentarily. Rachel Block could not be on this call today. So I'm just going to introduce the agenda quickly. I also have Rafael Ruiz from the Greater New York Hospital Association on the line with me. Just to go through really briefly the agenda, first we want to say there's a lot of participants on this call, so we're really happy about that. And we invited Carol Van Antwerpen from the New York State Department of Health. Carol's the program manager of the Hospital Acquired Infection Reporting Program there. And we're delighted to have Carol here with us to talk about some of the definitions for the Hospital Acquired Infection Reporting Initiative, specifically for CLABS. So we're going to start the call off with Carol, and then after that, we're just going to talk a bit about the updated CLABS Collaborative Monthly Results. Those are the aggregate results. And then we're going to talk really briefly about the beginning, starting up an initiative focused on C. difficile. But just before we begin, I want to just let you know what attachments we sent to you on around Monday. We sent you Carol's presentation, which contains protocols and definitions with regard to CLABS. Carol will be going through that in a few minutes. We also sent you the updated CLABS data up until May 2007. Finally, we sent you the agenda. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Carol Van Antwerpen. As mentioned before, Carol's the program manager of the Hospital Acquired Infection Reporting Program at the New York State Department of Health. And Carol, whenever you're ready.
I'm always ready. Good afternoon, everybody. If you follow along in the presentation that I hope you received, what I thought I would do today is review the protocols and definitions for central line associated bloodstream infections, referred to as CLABS, from NHSN, because that's what we're usually using here at the New York State Department of Health for public reporting. And what I'm going to focus on is in the NHN document or protocol document, they talk about, this is under the device associated module, and these are four that identify certain infections that fall in this device-associated module that only occur during a patient hospitalization. So they're hospital-acquired, and I'm going to focus just on the central line associated bloodstream infections, or CLABS, from this module. Just to review a little bit, for many of you, this won't be new information, but maybe it will be information that will clarify some questions you've had. It may even raise new questions, but I just wanted to review some of the surveillance aspects for hospital-acquired CLABS in the intensive care unit. And surveillance can be done in a variety of ways. It can be active, which is you have trained infection control professionals or trained individuals that look for and identify infections. And they can accumulate information about these infections from a variety of data sources such as the lab, pharmacy, radiology, or other areas. It can also be patient-based. That means it's not solely based on just laboratory data, but actually reviewing a patient's medical record to identify specific risk factors or even patient care procedures that may influence the development or even prevention of a CLABS. And also, most of the CLABS surveillance is done prospectively. That means we monitor patients during their hospitalization whenever possible, as opposed to later on, because, as you know, prospective data provides more data that you can currently use to develop prevention strategies than old data 6 or 7 months down the road. So what is an NHSN-defined central line? It's an intravascular catheter that terminates at or close to the heart or in one of the great vessels, which is used for infusion, withdrawal of blood, or hemodynamic monitoring. These come right from the NHSN protocol. So fluids have to move through it or out of it. And so if you had somebody that had a pacemaker wire that is inserted, it has no lumens in which fluid can be infused or bloods can be withdrawn. So that does not qualify as an NHSN central line. And just for review, your review, these are the great vessels that NHSN identifies for reporting central line infections and counting central line days. These are important pieces to remember. One thing that NHSN does not do is they did not identify a particular product or particular product identified device as a central line. What they ask you to do is to look at how it's used, if it's in one of the great vessels, and if it's used for any of the items I mentioned just before. So if you called and asked me, is this particular line a central line, I would have to go back to this specific definition and ask you these questions. So the next thing, they also have some qualifiers that an introducer is considered an intravascular catheter, and that a neonate's, the umbilical artery or vein, is also considered a great vessel. And as I mentioned before, that neither the location of the insertion site nor the type that's used is used to determine the line qualifies as a central line. It's really where it is and how it's used, and if fluid flows through it or fluid can be, bloods can be removed, that makes it a central line. So I mentioned the pacemaker wires, they're not lumened. They may be inserted into a blood vessel or the heart, but they're not considered a central line because you don't push fluids through it to infuse, and no fluids are withdrawn through such devices. And the types of central lines that are included in the NHSN surveillance are temporary catheters, those that are central lines that are non-tunnel. Also, permanent catheters, which include all the tunnel catheters and certain types of dialysis catheters, and also those catheters that are implanted and those that include ports. And the umbilical catheter is a central vascular device, and it's inserted to the umbilical artery or vein in a neonate. So those are the types of central lines that are included in the central line device-associated bloodstream infection module. Now, one of the things that has been created controversy is how does NHSN define an inpatient location? And in the last updated protocol document from May of 2007, they've further clarified what an inpatient location is, and this is important. It's any location in the institution where patients are housed overnight and where denominator can be collected. So an inpatient location such as your surgical wards, intensive care units, medical wards, etc., those are considered inpatient locations as well. Non-inpatient locations are those areas such as the operating room, emergency department, radiology, cardiac cath, recovery room, just to name a few. They may have patients that are housed there for a while, but they don't have an overnight stay, and generally denominator data it cannot be collected. So how does NHSN define a bloodstream infection? The first one is a primary BSI, which is really the driving definition for CLABS for NHSN, is that a pathogen is cultured from one or more blood cultures and not related to another infection at another site. And when they mention one or more blood cultures, they mean from separate locations or separate draws. So an individual has a blood culture drawn through the central line and a peripheral would count as separate sites. And if they've drawn them at different times, 15 minutes apart, an hour apart, or 2 hours apart, that would confer not related one blood culture from one or more blood culture sites. A secondary BSI, on the other hand, is a culture-confirmed bloodstream infection associated with a documented HAI or hospital-acquired infection at another site. And They must yield a culture of the same organism and exhibit the same antibiogram as the primary hospital-acquired infection. So that kind of gives you a little bit more of a framework. And these, again, were recently clarified in the NHSN document from May of 2007. So a CLAB surveillance definition, now you have to remember that for CLABs and NHSN, these are surveillance definitions, not clinical definitions. And sometimes that creates some confusion in terms of what do you include and what do you exclude. But a central line associated bloodstream infection, or CLABS, is a primary bloodstream infection, if you refer back to the definition I just gave you, in an inpatient that had a central line in place within the 48-hour period before the development of a bloodstream infection. That's their central line definition. Furthermore, when a central line is present and a bloodstream infection develops within 48 hours of discharge from an inpatient unit, remember my definition before about an inpatient location, the discharging unit, that would be the discharging inpatient unit, not the receiving inpatient unit, is the location for the central line or the CLABS occurrence. Now that sounds a little confusing. So I've got some clarifiers next that kind of pull this definition out into the real world or the real situation. So the first scenario is that a central line is inserted in an inpatient location. Remember, it's an overnight stay, and denominator data can be collected. And a CLABS occurs within 48 hours. It is attributed to that inpatient location. So that's the first one. The second scenario is a central line is present on admission or transfer to any inpatient location, and a CLABS occurs within 48 hours, it is attributed to the transferring inpatient location, not the receiving inpatient location. So an individual that is coming, let's say, from a surgical floor, an inpatient surgical floor, and has a central line in place, gets transferred into the intensive care unit, and a CLABS occurs within 48 hours of that transfer into the inpatient location, the medical or the surgical ward is accrued or accredited, I guess, with the central line associated infection, not the intensive care unit they're being transferred into. So what's the third scenario? A central line is inserted in a non-inpatient location. That would be the OR, emergency department, medical imaging, etc. And a patient is transferred to an inpatient location, and a CLABS occurs within 48 hours, the CLABS is attributed to that receiving inpatient location. And I just want to mention at this time is that we actually have had numerous phone calls emails and conversations with many of you in New York State, not just down in the New York City region, but upstate, about NHSN's use of this criteria or definition. And their response is that unless you can identify and count denominator data for a particular location, there's no way to create a rate for infection. So they've included these infections in with the unit that the person ends up in, the inpatient location. We have made some suggestions to them and asked them for and given them some ideas on how to maybe exclude those patients that are transferred from another non-inpatient location into the ICU, and they're working on that. But as it stands now, this is how the criteria to be applied when it obviously was inserted in a non-inpatient location and they got transferred to the ICU, let's say. The ICU sort of gets credited for now. And the fourth scenario is that the central line is in place for more than 48 hours in any inpatient location and a CLABS occurs, it's attributed to that inpatient location. I don't make up the rules. I just impart them. So for NHSN, for laboratory-confirmed bloodstream infections, this you have a choice of basically three criteria in which to choose whether someone meets the definition of a central line associated bloodstream infection. The first criteria is that a patient has a recognized pathogen cultured from one or more blood cultures, and the organism cultured from the blood is not related to an infection at another site. How do they define a recognized pathogen? Those are pathogens such as E. coli, Acinetobacter, Staph aureus, Candida, etc. They fit into that particular recognized pathogen group. Okay? And it's not related to an infection at another site. And what they mean by an infection at a site, that it's documented, that there is objective documentation supported either by laboratory or diagnostic reports to verify that it's not associated with the blood primarily. Now, or they give you criteria number two. Criteria number two is a laboratory-confirmed bloodstream infection for any patients in any age group. And this one really focuses most often on those problematic bacteria or microorganisms that are often seen as contaminants or could be skin contaminants. And I will tell you that the patient has to have at least one of the following: signs or symptoms of fever. And that's how they define fever. And I want to point out here is that in the revised protocol document of May of 07, they didn't include these clarifications for temperature. But if you refer back to the February issue of 2007 of the NHSN e-news, it's documented there as well. But I included them in the presentation so you could see them. So they have to have just one of those signs or symptoms, not all of them. And they have to have a positive laboratory results that are not related to an infection at another site, and at least one of the following. And there's 2A. There's a common skin contaminant, such as coag-negative staph, and it's cultured from two or more blood cultures drawn on separate occasions. And separate occasions means it's drawn 15 minutes, 2 hours, or an hour later, etc., maybe 24 hours. So that's one. So if they meet that criteria of 2A, you stop there, and it meets criteria for a CLABS. If it doesn't meet that one, you go to the next one, which is 2B, in which a common skin contaminant is cultured from at least one blood culture from a patient with an intravascular line and the physician institutes appropriate antimicrobial therapy. Now, at this point, I also want to interject a comment. Is in the May issue of the e-news and in the May updated protocol document, there was a further description about further clarifying what physician institutes appropriate antimicrobial therapy means. At the last APIC meeting, when they had the NHSN member meeting, the NHSN retracted or rescinded what was updated in the protocol document, as well as what was published in the e-news. I'm not sure if they sent out a communication to everyone. And they're reevaluating what they published. And this was really based on information that we received from the different hospitals that were reporting, as well as we also saw it as inconsistent and inconsistent in the ability to apply what they had written. So I'll go on a little further to clarify how you right now would identify or should say clarify appropriate antimicrobial therapy. Now, there's criteria three, which is laboratory-confirmed bloodstream infection for neonates. And those are babies or infants less than a year of age. And they have to have at least one of the following signs or symptoms, as you see here. And the criteria, as I just went over in criteria two, are the same. 3A and 3B are the same as outlined in criteria two. So I won't spend any more time on that. Now, let me just talk a little bit about criteria 2 and B, which talks about antimicrobial therapy. In the New York State Department of Health, in our HPN, on the HPN, in the hospital-acquired infection program location, we have a question and answer section. And Question 9, which has been there for about 6 months now, says that if a patient has a positive blood culture potentially associated with a central line and the physician initiates antibiotics but discontinues them 48 to 72 hours later, does this meet CLABS LCBI and clinical sepsis as defined in the NHSN Patient Safety Protocol document? And the answer right now, and this is the current status, is no. Initiation of antimicrobial agents for only 48 to 72 hours represents empiric therapy and would not be considered treatment for a laboratory-confirmed bloodstream infection or clinical sepsis, central line-associated bloodstream infection. And the continuation of antibiotics, though, for a longer period of time would be considered therapeutic use and which would then meet the criteria for 2B and 3B for a CLABS. So if they initially start somebody on antibiotics and then when they get the laboratory results back decide that it's a contaminant and they DC the antibiotics, it does not meet criteria for CLABS. If, on the other hand, they continue the antibiotic therapy for the CLABS or they change the antibiotics to reflect the sensitivity reports that are returned related to that blood culture, it does meet criteria for a central line-associated bloodstream infection. I know that's a little confusing, but you just kind of have to think about it a little bit. And the other thing I'm going to go over briefly is there's also criteria for clinical sepsis. This only applies to neonates or infants, and it only applies to neonates less than 30 days of age and for infants less than 12 months. It is not used for adults or pediatric intensive care units at all. For those populations, only laboratory confirmed is used. The patient criteria is that the child is less than a year of age, has one of the following signs or symptoms, you know, fever, only one, hypothermia or apnea or bradycardia, and a blood culture is not done or no organisms are detected in the blood, and no impaired infection in another site, and the physician institutes treatment for sepsis. So you have to have one of the symptoms, and then you have to have all those other ands before it even qualifies for a central line-associated BSI. Now I want to switch gears to the denominator data for the adult in the pediatric ICU. At the same time each day, you need to count and record the number of patients in the intensive care unit. That will eventually give you your patient days for the month, and the number of patients with one or more central lines. So if a patient has 5 central lines, you only count it as 1. If they have, but you do count all the number of patients. Then you need to sum those daily recorded numbers at the end of the month, get the sum total, and that'll give you your patient days and the central line days. And just to give you an example of what this would look like is in the first column where it says the number of patients, those are the ones that were entered each day. And right across them is the number of central lines. That's the number of patients that had a central line or more. And then you total them at the end of the month, patient days and central line days, and that gives your denominators for central lines. Now, for the NICU, it's a little bit more complicated. And those of you that have been part of the NIST system before, they added an additional weight category. But so that the central line denominator data for the NICU population is really collected by birth weight categories. And to further, not complicate, but I guess complicate, is within those birth weight categories, you also have to determine if the infant has a central line or an umbilical catheter. So at the same time each day, you need to count for each of the birth weight categories and record in each birth weight category the number of patients in that birth weight category and the number of patients within that birth weight category that have one or more central lines. And they're separated into central line days and umbilical catheters. So an infant has both an umbilical catheter and a central line. You only count the umbilical catheter day. You exclude the central line day. Now, the next day you're doing the counts and the umbilical catheter is gone and you only have a central line now, now you just count the central line. And then again at the month, you're going to total the patient days, the central line days, and the umbilical catheter days by each birth weight category. And I'll show you, these are the birth weight categories, the 5 of them. And this is how you would enter the information if you were using this NHSN's worksheet. Is every day the first column would have for the birth weight category the number of patients in that birth weight category in the NICU, the number that had an umbilical catheter and the number that had a central line. And then at the end of the month, you would add them up for each one of those categories. So for the New York State, we have on our HPN network, we do have central line associated questions. And what I did for today is I picked out a couple that I thought would represent some of the most common questions I thought you might ask. So let's take question number 4 that we have. If a central line is inserted in a non-inpatient location and the patient is transferred or returned to an inpatient location, so this is the ICU or the non-ICU inpatient care unit, and a collapse occurs within 48 hours, what location is the collapse assigned? The answer is that the inpatient location, which is the ICU or the non-ICU, would be selected as the location associated with the collapse event. The ED, the OR, radiology are not considered NHSN inpatient locations. Now, question 7. If a patient has a central line present on hospital admission and develops a collapse event within 48 hours associated with that central line, is this considered a hospital-acquired infection? The answer is no. It's not associated to the admitting hospital. And question number 10 that we have is, in the NHSN protocol document, laboratory-confirmed bloodstream infection criterion 2A and 3A, what is meant by two blood cultures drawn on separate occasion? This refers to blood cultures that are drawn during two different time periods, as I mentioned before, such as 15 minutes, 1 hour, etc. Now, question 13 is, when there's daily recording of the NICU denominator data, is the information entered by birth weight or current weight category? It's always entered by birth weight. That's the risk stratifier for the events in the NICU. Okay. So with that, I think I'll open it up to questions, if I can answer some of them.
Thanks so much, Carol. I just want to repeat one point that Carol said at the beginning of her presentation, that a lot of this is not new information to you, but we just felt in inviting Carol here to be with us today that we wanted to clarify some of the data definitions. Great opportunity to ask Carol some questions, if you have any, with regard to anything she presented or the HARE initiative. So, operator, with that, if we could open it up for questions from the group.
Thank you, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Our first question comes from Cecilia Wilfinger. Question, please.
Hi, Carolyn. How are you?
I'm good today.
My question is, if we take into consideration all the criteria you just said, and we have a patient with a positive culture, the criteria is not met. However, the physician documents that this is sepsis secondary to a central line. CNS, 1 out of 6 bottles, and they treat. Should we be considering that a CLAB?
If you look at the criteria, I'm going to do criteria 2, because that's what I have to go back to. The patient has at least one of the following signs or symptoms, okay, and a positive laboratory results not related to an infection at another site, and at least one of the following. And what you've identified for me is it's 1 out of 6, correct?
Correct.
Common skin contaminant, it reads, is culture from at least one blood culture from a patient with an intravascular line and the physician institutes appropriate antimicrobial therapy.
Okay.
And what if the infection?
Even if we can, we're looking at the infection at another site, but the physician still documents that it's secondary to line sepsis. My question is, until we can roll out the education to get all the physicians to document appropriately, are you going to consider these line bacteremias if we review this chart and feel that there's an infection somewhere else?
If you feel there's an infection at another site, it has to be a documented infection at another site. An example, if somebody has generally coag-negative staph doesn't cause things like, it can, like a UTI, It generally doesn't cause pneumonia. It can cause infections of, let's say, ventricular devices. If somebody had a CABG and had a valve put in place within the time frame, it could be responsible. But generally, you have to have documentation that supports that there is no documented infection related to that same organism with the same sensitivity pattern at another site.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any further questions at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. I show no further questions in queue at this time, ma'am. You may continue.
Okay. Well, thank you. We'll have Carol, if you can stay on the call till 3, that would be great, just in case there's any kind of last-minute questions that people think about.
And I do want to thank you for providing me the opportunity. You know, when we started doing the training in October, I'd only been on the job 6 weeks and had to put a whole program together and relearn some of the NHSN. So I really had the opportunity to really kind of hone what I do know. And so I really thank the opportunity for Greater New York for providing me this moment to kind of share in a more concrete way some of the information about CLABS.
This is great, and we thank you for joining us. Like I said, the group had been aware of the definitions, but we just felt like it was time to revisit them at this point. So this was a great overview.
Great, thanks.
So we'll just go on with the agenda, and then if there's any questions toward the end, we can go with them. First, I want to see, Terry, are you on the line yet?
I am, Hillary. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, great. So we just wanted to give you a quick update on the CLABS aggregate results. Terry, do you want me to go through those?
Sure, Hillary.
Okay. And we do have Raphael Ruiz on the line as well. So we did send you the latest results for both the Round 1 and the Round 2 hospitals, and we were delighted that we received not all the data, but most of the data from hospitals. And as you could see through the graph on Round 1 that we still have a CLAB infection rate for those that submit data of under 2 infections per 1,000 central line days. So, it's been anywhere between over the last 4 months, 1.26 infections per 1,000 central line days and 1.76 infections per 1,000 central line days. I don't want to say anything yet about the May data because that's very underreported right now. And then Round 2, just very similar to results. One thing about Round 2, there are less hospitals in the cohort, so we do ask that those that weren't in the original group of hospitals, if you haven't submitted your data to us and have it for April or May, please send it to us and we can update this graph. Like Dr. Cole said when he presented this data during the last call, the graphs are only as good as the data that you give us, and it'll be the most accurate if we have the most up-to-date results included in them. Raphael, is there anything else you want to add to what I just said?
I guess not.
Okay. So we're really happy about the results. Terry, anything else to add about the results?
No, everyone should have received your individual data and your aggregate data. We did send them out to all of the CEOs, so congratulating you for all of the hard work you've done so far. So I encourage you, if they have not spoke to you about the data, for you to discuss the data with them and see how you can move to the next step of getting the rates even lower if you're still not at zero. Any questions for anyone?
Operator, let's open it up and see if anyone has any questions about the data.
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone.
All right, if there are no questions, then we can move on and
question or questions, ma'am?
Talk about the C. difficile, Hillary?
Great, yep.
Okay, for those of you who have not heard on previous conference calls, as we move forward with the CLABS initiative, we recognize that most hospitals have done such a great job at moving forward with CLABS that you're probably tired of hearing us talk about it, to be quite honest. So we thought, let's move forward, continue to report the CLABS data moving forward, and we will continue to collect and report the CLABS data back to you until the state is up and running and having their website to the point where they're providing useful data back to you, both on your individual hospital level as well as the aggregate hospital level. At the same time, we will be launching the C. difficile initiative. The first step in this initiative is putting together a steering committee, and Hillary or Eden should have sent out an invite to select members of the CLABS initiative to join us on that committee. However, if you did not receive an invitation to join the committee, we certainly do not want to slight anyone. We also didn't want to put an additional burden on anyone to participate in an additional activity, given you have limited time. So if you'd like to join it, please give Hillary a call or just email us, and we will be sure to send you an invitation. It will be a short meeting, I think, on July 31st.
25th.
25th, yeah. Okay. And it will be at Greater New York or by conference call. The purpose of the meeting will be to begin talking about the framework for the C. diff initiative, as well as the quality indicators that we want to collect data for, and what components of the bundle will be used to be checked off as we move forward. So we will be actually creating the CLABS, the C. difficile bundle, because although there's a lot of literature out there as to what to do, there is no official bundle. So this time around, we'll actually be creating that. So that's rather exciting. Once the steering committee decides on some of the structure issues, we will be sending an invitation out, giving priority to the CLABS hospitals that have been working with us, either CLABS 1 or Round 2 CLABS, to join the C. difficile collaborative. One of the criteria to get into this collaborative will be participation in CLABS 1 or 2. You will be given priority. Second level of priority for participation will be those hospitals that have submitted CLAB data timely to us, and we have the most up-to-date data for your hospital. And then if we still have additional room, we will let the other CLAB hospitals in if they're interested in updating all of their data and moving forward. We may also open it up to a few, very few new hospitals so that they become part of the C. difficile collaborative, and they can begin modeling quality improvement models based on the formation of the current CLAB model. Any questions? Operator, we can open it up. Hillary, anything else you would like to add to that?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. Just did you say anything about when we're thinking of having the first meeting?
No. I think we'll announce, hopefully we'll have it sometime in mid-fall, but we want to give everyone enough time to work on the steering committee to work on the measures and really flush them out thoroughly before we move forward. So, operator, if you don't mind, you can open up the line.
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. I do show we have a question from Lucille Heron. Question, please.
Hello?
Hi, this is Audrey Adams in Lucille's office. How's everybody doing?
Hi, Audrey.
Good. I have a question in regards to the C. difficile collaborative project. When you have your strategic planning group, will you bring back your recommendations to the overall group for us to, you know, get an idea of what you are planning?
On the CLABS call that will follow that initial strategic planning group, we will update everyone on what we discussed so far and then solicit additional feedback.
Okay, very good. I just want to make sure we'll have a chance to give some feedback and give some of our, you know, feelings regarding your plans.
Absolutely. In order, actually, I thought you were on the list, so we will make sure you get that after this call.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. I should have heard the questions in queue at this time, ma'am.
Okay, thank you very much, operator. So, Hillary, any other issues that we want to touch upon?
Well, I think that was pretty much the agenda. The only other thing, there was a little typo on the agenda that we sent out. The next conference call is on Wednesday, August 1st. So we wrote the 3rd, which is a Friday. It's the first Wednesday, which is the 1st. But other than that, I think we're pretty much set with the agenda, unless there's anything else to add. Of course, the only other thing I would like to say is we keep updating the Jenny website, and we do notice there's still a lot of traffic on it. So we're happy that people are still reviewing the content and going to the Q&A, which just is still really active.
Right, and I think it's more important than ever as the state starts to begin their data collection for public reporting and they start considering additional infections that they will be collecting data for. So we thank everyone for being on the call today. We will be getting out information on the next next conference call in regard to the C. difficile follow-up. And we encourage you to call us if you have any questions. Please, if you can at all possible, if you have not submitted your data, please get it in to us so that you can be considered for the C. difficile collaborative. We've had many inquiries from non-CLAB hospitals, and we want to make sure we can give all the CLAB hospitals first priority moving forward. One of the things, as Hillary and I continue to introduce more collaboratives, basically our resources are staying the same. It's Hillary, myself, and Raphael doing some data analysis. So we really do not have the time to continue to nag everyone to get the data in a timely way. At this point, we're hoping it just becomes a road activity. So if you have any questions or problems with the data or you need assistance with getting the data, we'd be happy to talk to you about how to overcome some of those potential barriers that you do have. So that said, enjoy the rest of July and enjoy the weather. Hillary?
Thanks so much, everyone. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you in August.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for attending today's conference. This concludes the program. You may now disconnect. Good day.